is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to...
Welcome to What a Week, and well, what a morning it's been. Who knew that we'd be getting a war on? This is Eric Nelson. I'm sitting here with...
My name is Wallace Bain.
Yeah. Well, we were going to do a different kind of show today, Wallace, but we're going to get to, your exit interview. It's 35 years contributing mightily to our community, but I think we got to look down south to Caracas and the events that the senile Satan triggered at about 2 a.m. last night. So stay tuned, buckle up. We're going to talk about topic A, and then topic B, and then topic C, and then have a much more uplifting conversation with Wallace Bain in just a second. Yeah, what a week or what a morning. So it takes time, you know, you check text messages. I wake up to blue sky and I noticed something was going on among, and there's a lot of agitated blue skyers who I follow. And then it took a while of a little scrolling at 5:30 to say, he did what? Okay, really? And there's this combination of inevitability, shock, and awful, and the shock and awful is what's been characterized the last year of this administration. So, Wallace, you're a stand-in for our listeners. What was your morning like? What were your thoughts upon this? And the more bewildered and shocked you are, is just fine. I can I'm with you with that.
So many thoughts. The first one being, in a functional democracy, how is this not an impeachable offense? Essentially, you're kidnapping the president of another country.
Yeah, and you think China's looking and saying, so Taiwan looks pretty good right now. We'll send us one of those hypersonic missiles over there for a wake-up call. That's a
sure.
good precedent, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it really brings back this sort of late 19th century McKinley, Teddy Roosevelt kind of, you know, this is our hemisphere and we're going to...
Yeah, in this case, though, it's walk loudly and carry a big shtick, not a stick.
Exactly.
In the case of Donald Trump.
Maybe it should be MEGA instead of MIGA, make imperialism great again,
there
right?
There you go. Well, the thing that's also very frustrating, and as an American, Wallace, it upsets me. At least the Bush administration, they knew how to, like, lie well to get us into a needless war. You know,
right.
You know, where is Colin Powell and fake uranium cylinders?
Right.
Where's fabricating evidence? You know, at least a government, if they can't tell the truth, they can lie well. But then when you think about it, what are they going to do? Send Whiskey Pete, soon to be in The Hague, Seth, down there with a bottle of Jack Daniels to make stuff up? I mean... The gang that couldn't shoot straight can't even get this right. But, you know, I at least demand a government that lies to me properly. You know, I don't think, is that too much to ask, Wallace Bain?
We thought, you know, 20 years ago in the Gulf War, we thought, oh, now this is just beyond the pale. We can't even imagine anything worse. Well, you know, yeah, they at least made the case, the bogus case to the American people. They, with all the WMD lies. This time, they're not even bothering to make the case to the American people. It's more like, I'll do what I want.
Well,
shut up.
A wannabe, you know, the senile Satan wants to be Vladimir Putin. It's always been true from the moment he took office. That's who he wants to be. And this is Putin's playbook in the Ukraine.
Impunity, not accountability. That's what it's really all about.
And David Rothkopf wrote this morning. He said, of all the leaders Trump could have chosen as role models, Trump has chosen the most brutal, corrupt dictator on the planet. He's often spoken of his admiration for stark autocratic displays of power. He envies the dull-eyed displays of loyalty it wins from cowering aides and military offers. He sees laws as restrictions imposed on little people beneath him. And that's a definite
thing
from the Putin playbook. Well, yeah, I mean, the Pottery Barn rule also applies here, and that's, you know, a standard of foreign diplomacy. If you break it, you bought it. And if you did a, you know, this, the operation itself, I bet you, was carried out flawlessly. Whiskey Pete hasn't dismantled the awesome capability of the U.S. military yet. He's certainly working on it. But now it's, we're in the... who is it? Big Balls. Remember the guy in, who they installed at Doge? He's going to be the new secretary.
Seems so long ago, didn't it?
He's the new secretary of oil management down there. You know, this incompetent band of incompetent losers is going to do everything possible to screw this up. You know, in the words of David Mamet, who unfortunately has changed, they'd screw up a two-car funeral and you could spot them the hearse. You know, and I think in this case, once again, and of course, oil much anyone, you know, it's just such a thinly veiled thing. One thing I get, I've brought this up on What a Week before. One of the few things that gives me hope that I actually look for is we know the Washington Post, and I'm sitting here with a Pulitzer Prize winner. I can't mention that enough, Wallace Bain, and congratulations for the 80,000th time on Lookout, your paper and yourself winning a much deserved one of those things. But the Washington Post, who forced out their Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist, remember, and when Jeff Bezos took it over. So their editorial page makes the Wall Street Journal look like the New Republic. You know, it's getting worse and worse and worse. But what they've done, it's the only effective use of AI I can think of, the only effective use of AI, is that they process their comments. So this morning, they had an editorial. There's the headline. Trump's bold capture of Maduro was a victory for America. What's next? And it goes downhill from there.
Oh my God.
I spotted it this morning when it had like 216 comments, and then it ratcheted up to 521. And then when I last checked just before I came into the station, it was 2,300, which is like, you know, red line DEFCON 4 comments. So the algorithm kicked in. So this is what the algorithm at the Washington Post says.
To rewrite the headline.
To what they think of the editorial the paper did. The conversation explores strong criticism of the piece, which is perceived as supportive of Trump's actions. Participants express outrage over what they see as an illegal and unconstitutional act of invading a sovereign country and kidnapping its leader. Many comments highlight the violation of international law and the lack of congressional support, drawing parallels to past U.S. regime change. There is a recurring theme of disappointment and anger towards the Washington Post for endorsing these actions, with some commentators threatening to unsubscribe or expressing nostalgia for the paper's past journalistic integrity. So that's what the Washington Post is actually putting. If you go to the editorial and you say, what do the readers think? It's just overwhelming. And that's a good thing. It shows that the American people, let's kick that beehive over. You know, let's go up there, poke that wasp's nest, because, well, I won't get stung. If you look at Trump's discolored, bloated hands, he's probably been stung a few times already. But I digress. But, you know, how do you keep up? We call it shock and awful, and use the phrase profiles in discourage. And once again, profiles in discourage. And what is this, January 3rd? It already feels like we're in mid-March. Does it not, Wallace Bain?
Yes, it does. I think about how naive I've been about all this in the past. I remember reading a book, I can't remember the name of it now. It was a deep account of the entire mess that we inherited after we toppled Saddam in Iraq.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Donald Rumsfeld. You go to war with the army you have. Oh, they'll fold.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
That worked out really well now, didn't it?
And that kind of running the country in absence of the dictator. And I thought, well, here it is. At least we have this lesson in history that will ensure that we won't be doing this again in the near future. And of course, Trump has no sense of history and all. So the lesson didn't take, I guess.
Well, yeah. Let's see what, you know, it's important here. Let me see if I can find this here. Well, this is the press conference this morning, so this is the man himself.
All of these actions were in gross violation of the core principles of American foreign policy. All the way back, it dated to the Monroe Doctrines. And the Monroe Doctrine is a big deal. But we've superseded it by a lot. By a real lot. They now call it the Donroe Document. I don't know.
They now call it the Donroe. So, you know, one of his flunkies, when he woke up this morning, mentioned that phrase to him, and it lodged in that fever swamp of a brain. But before he did his official press conference where he issued that bit, this is the real reason he did it. This is the real Donald Trump. He called in the Fox and Friends, five dolts on a divan, and issued this.
If you would have seen what happened, I mean, I watched it literally like I was watching a television show. And if you would have seen the speed, the violence, you know, they say that, the speed, the violence, they use that term. It's it was an amazing thing, an amazing job that these people did. There's nobody else could have done anything like it.
So we did a show last year, What a Week, where we brought Andy Dehnart, who writes Reality Blurred, the premier thing on reality television. He's been doing it for 25 years. This guy knows his stuff. Entire point of the show was Trump season two is a reality show. Because that's really right. What it is. We're going to cast it from Fox News. We're going to do regular, you know, keep people on the edge of their seats with suspense and cast changes. We're going to do events to, and this, again, Trump's reaction, the violence, he's describing the Ultimate Fighting Championship. This is how this guy's, this fever brain of his, this rapidly disintegrating brain of this guy processes information. And will he get away with it? You know, long, long pause, rueful shakes of the head. Well, look, let's try again. We try to balance utter depression with good stuff. So today, Wallace Bain, is the 100th birthday. 100th birthday, George Martin.
And of Beatles fame.
You cannot bring up George Martin without playing at least one track, a big hit from George Martin. Of course, this group needs no introduction.
100th birthday. 100th That's birthday astonishing.
Today. Yeah, wow. So I got to go for the obvious choice. So this was a big hit for George Martin, a legendary band, and, well, I'm sure you've heard this one before.
Now me and my wife went to town. Well, we went to buy a $10 gown. Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Well, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Well, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
She tried the green, she tried the red.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
I'll have them both, that's what she said.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Well, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Well, she put one on and it looked a treat.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
Then found another man to meet.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Now this to leave my girl alone.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
Well, she got what she wants at home.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Now don't she rock me, daddy-o.
I'm going upstairs to pack my trunk.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
Home, find a bar and get me drunk.
Sail away, lady, sail away.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Don't she rock me, daddy-o.
Oh, don't she rock me, daddy-o.
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 Meet the Vipers, 1957. Yes, that was George Martin produced it. That was produced 5 years before he met the Beatles. No, it was 1950s.
I had no idea. That's just amazing.
And then he went on to produce Peter Sellers, The Swing Inside of Peter Sellers, records by Rolf Harris. He was like the hottest producer in town. But what happened was he had an affair with his secretary, and in those staid days, it's one thing to have an affair with your secretary, it's another thing to get caught, and they demoted him. They basically demoted him, pushed him down the food chain, and he was in charge of, well, artists that nobody else wanted to deal with. So guess why he met the Beatles? They were sort of dumped in his lap. Here's a courtesy, just listen to these guys. You know, you're being punished here. You know, Liverpool, are you kidding? They've already been shot down by Decca Records because guitar groups are on the way out. And the rest, as they say, is history. 100 years old today.
Was that before Beatlemania and all that stuff, or did it come after when George Martin was connected to the Beatles?
Well, no, they say the Vipers was 57. Mm-hmm. Affair with Secretary was like 1960 or something.
I see.
Beatles
okay.
don't come across the doorway till 62. And,
I see.
So, you know, Martin heard something there, and the great moment was when George Harrison, they first met, and Martin said, well, is there anything you don't like? And George said, well, for starters, I don't like your tie. And there was a long pause as the other members of the Fab Four are like, oh, S-word, thanks for blowing our second audition. And Martin broke out laughing, and the rest, is, again, as they say, is history, but 100 years old today. Well, speaking of media institutions that has gotten, we didn't have Barry Weiss has basically destroyed. And again, what a week, I have to say, folks. When Skydance was first rumored to be buying Paramount, my immediate thought was, no, it's not the hemorrhoid-lipped fail son David Ellison who's buying it. It's Larry Ellison, right-wing billionaire, who's buying Paramount, and he has an agenda. Well, surprise, surprise. In case you're just coming in from the planet Mars, they bought out Barry Weiss's Free Press, Barry Weiss being a professional disgruntled conservative, worked for the New York Times, picked a fight because she was being suppressed, left, and then went to form a loser university in Austin, a champion of free speech. But they bought her Free Press, he said Free Press advisedly, for $150 million and gave her the keys to CBS News. So early last week, or the week before, I'm forgetting, oh no, it was a week ago Saturday, actually, they had a report ready to go out on incarceration in El Salvador, and a totally researched lockdown expose of ICE's brutal methods. And the day of air, Barry Weiss pulls the plug. Not before, of course, Canada actually put it on online so everyone saw it. And she's trying to pretend that it didn't meet their rigorous standards and would be re-aired. Big surprise, 60 Minutes has published their schedule for the next month. That piece isn't in it. So, in essence, they allowed Stephen Miller, Nazi Ferrato, the kill switch, because they were waiting for him to do an interview in the piece. All he had to do is say no, then it wasn't balanced and she killed it. So now she's put, as somebody referred to him, a big jar of mayonnaise as the new anchor of CBS News. And what's this guy's name? I should dig it up here. I have to pronounce it phonetically. But this guy's come in and he's basically promising to equal opportunity. We're going to listen to the ordinary people. Yes, it's DeCoppel is his name, DeCoppel. And so this is his statement that he's given officially as his, this is what we're going to do and what the tenor of CBS News is going to be like. This is the new Walter Cronkite, basically.
A lot has changed since the first person sat in this chair, but for me, the biggest difference is people do not trust us like they used to. The point is, on too many stories, the press has missed the story because we've taken into account the perspective of advocates and not the average American. Or we put too much weight in the analysis of academics or elites and not enough on you. So here's my promise to you, today and every time you see me in this chair. You come first. It also means I'm going to talk to everybody and hold everyone in public life to the very same standard. I'm Tony DeCoppel, the anchor of the CBS Evening News.
I, for one, welcome our new insect overlords.
Yes. I, for one, welcome our new insect overlords. folks, radio is not a visual medium, but if you could see a Pulitzer Prize winning Wallace Bain cradling your head in your hands when you were listening to that. So this is more your beat than mine. This is the press. This is journalism here. What do you how do you take that?
I was just thinking several months ago when one of my great heroes, Bill Moyers, passed away, and it's almost a blessing now. That he would see CBS in particular. Let's not forget that CBS News created many of the standards of integrity in broadcast journalism going back to the days of Murrow and Cronkite. You mentioned it, but they had a stable of people who...
The Tiffany Network, known yes, for a reason. They yes. understood that.
And now you have this sort of zombie network, proto-Fox News kind of... propaganda outfit. You comes first? Really? I want to hear a man on the street about what's going on in Caracas right now?
Well, and that's what they, you know, that harkens back to the fabulous diner pieces the New York Times ran, you know, where David Brooks would go out and talk to ordinary people about what Americans are really thinking. Of course, ignoring the fact that ordinary Americans, I will never say they're stupid, because that's not necessarily true. I will say they're uneducated. I will say that the average American isn't up to a literacy level, don't entertain opposing ideas, don't read a lot of different news sources, either don't listen to the news at all or just rely on one thing. So obviously what Dukopel is saying right now is we're going to go back to Vox Populi. CBS News will turn into the comments page at Reddit or, God forbid, X, to get the ordinary, to balance out all those eggheads, because Lord knows, just like RFK Jr. is doing, is turning out all those egghead scientists and kicking them out of the CDC. We can't have those eggheads telling us what to do.
We're going
to
put you in charge of the CDC, you know, the average American.
Yeah, it's like, look.
Go for it.
You know, we're about to take off from SFO. You know, come on, can anyone else fly this plane? How hard can this be?
Right,
all these
right.
experts up here in the cockpit. Anyone, show of hands, please. Sure, come on up there. We'll get you to your destination.
The most insidious thing about this is the redefinition. And I think you and I have spoken about this in the past. The redefinition of that term elites having to do with people with education and people with... you know, perspective and experience in a certain field, as opposed to what elites really are, and they're economic elites. They are the billionaire class.
Or elites are educated. You know, Richard, we're in Richard Hofstadter Theater. I'm looking at you, Professor Dom Hoff, UCSC in the mid-70s, mm-hmm. reading Hofstadter about the anti-intellectualism strain in American life.
Right.
Certainly McCarthy did that. It was,
right.
Remember, Adlai Stevenson was the card-carrying egghead.
The egghead,
and,
yeah.
You know, that's where they go and how they do. And jettisoning expertise for gut feelings gives us, well, the senile Satan. It gives you the cabinet of deplorables that we have right now. And now that CBS has handed over the torch. The thing, though, that, again, I brought up earlier, and I do see it as a source of optimism, is we elites are powerful. We elites pay a lot in taxes. We elites buy a lot of stuff that we may not necessarily buy. No more Teslas, let's say. We elites certainly can write nasty comments to the Washington Post and have Jeff Bezos. If you don't, you think he's reading either the editorials or the individual comments, he probably does what I do when he reads the summary. So overwhelmingly, what this guy is getting overwhelmingly is people are barfing up what he's trying to serve them. And there's a limit to how far it can go. These are not smart people. Donald Trump was never smart. He just took advantage. It was that preternaturally good at taking advantages of cracks in the system and slithering through the gaps. And then extraordinarily, he did it again. But, you know, now we've got, you know, the current situation. So I sort of have this alternate modes of despair and optimism, and it's tough to say what will win, but at least we're not going down, and opinions are still being freely expressed despite best efforts. And who was watching, honestly, who the hell was watching CBS Evening News anyway? Do you know anyone, Wallace Bain, who actually watches CBS News on a television set at 6:30 at night? Anybody?
I think I did in 1997 for a bit.
1990, that was a remote era here.
Yes, yes.
Which kind of brings us, by the way, which brings us to, and I want to now tease it appropriately and play the appropriate music to get into it. Wallace, you've been a fixture on the landscape of Santa Cruz media. You're on Mount Rushmore. You're up there on that. You're up there, right up there, the Borglum art up there. And you've called. You retired. You know, it surprised me. I've known you a long time. I didn't know it, and I had to read it in Lookout. You were retiring. And what I'd like to do when we come back is conduct something of an exit interview.
Of course.
About what. You know, the last 34 years, the stories you've covered, you know, some of the stuff that's going on, and, you know, get a sense. And by the way, I don't buy for a second that you're retired. I'm going to get that right out on the table. You're too good and you're too valued in our community. So we simply will not accept this. So I just want to tell you right now where we're going. But Marty Stewart just came out with an album. I just got it, brand new record, and it's a collection of surfing instrumentals. How's that? So I'm going to play Marty Stewart does surfing instrumentals, which I think is the good prelude to talk deep down into your past, present, and hopefully your future. I'm Eric Nelson. I'm here with
Wallace Payne.
And this, you're listening to What a Week on KSQD. Marty Stewart channeling his inner Dick Dale. What do you think of that one?
That was amazing. I love that stuff. I love reinterpretations of it. I just think it's great. And that's amazing. I'm going to go after that now.
Yeah, well, there you go. You see, you got to do an interview with Marty Stewart next time. Oh, wait a minute. You've retired. No more free tickets for you, Wallace Bain.
That's right. That's right.
So to give our viewers a heads up, I'll go through the facts here, that you started at the Sentinel 1991, correct?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Came over from the farm team. You were in the minor leagues in Gilroy, and you were called up to the majors.
That's right.
Back when the Santa Cruz Sentinel actually was a major, was actually a functioning newspaper.
Absolutely.
Not an apparatchik of Alden Hedge Fund Capital. You know, they have Shmuel Thaler, like absolutely one of the great photographers of our era.
Yes.
It's like, you know, Lookout's got to get him over there. But then you've got a great photographer at Lookout. So, but that's about it. And Shmuel, by the way, always puts his, like, raw footage on his Facebook page. One of the only other reasons besides Santa Cruz against runaway development. Have I mentioned that?
Yes.
Santa Cruz against runaway development. But the other thing that Facebook's good for is Shmuel's personal webpage, because he'll put 90 pictures, this whole camera load, and every picture he takes is great, and then you can pick out, oh, there's the otter behind the surfer. But I digress. Well, here's a question for you. In the what stories in the last 35 years are you crowd that you got, you know, that you were on, that you, the ones that kind of stick out, you know, there are a few that sort of stick out that you go, whoa, that was a good one. And I'm not talking about what got you the Pulitzer last year. I'm talking about other things. You came in right after the earthquake, so you missed that one. But a lot's gone down in Santa Cruz in 34 years.
Well, you know, when I think back on that, I mean, I was a different kind of reporter, quote unquote. I was not a news guy pounding, looking for the scoop so much as I was sort of painting a picture of the culture of Santa Cruz. So I don't think I really had any kind of breakthroughs on the scoop front or anything like
but
that.
But you were on the art scene, though. So
yes.
You were running into music, you know, you were encountering people before they became people, encountering people who were big at the time. I mean, there certainly must some things that stick out.
Well, yeah, I mean, on that score, the actor Adam Scott, who's a big deal now, right? A movie star, really.
Absolutely.
His mother was a fan of mine, and she had written me a few times. This was back in maybe 2000 or something, and her name was Ann Chambers. She's since passed away, but beautiful lady, really, really nice, and she kept talking about her son, and so I did a story on Adam right around the time he was doing, I forget the name of the sort of cult series that he was in when he played a caterer.
Oh, yes. I'll pull it up. But yes,
That one.
They just brought it back for another run.
Right. While he was shooting that. And he was essentially just kind of just getting started. And it's been amazing to follow his career. But the thing that has really sort of excited me over the years is
Party Down.
Party Down.
Party Down.
That's,
and they brought
right.
it back, too, recently.
Yes,
and
they did.
The second run is great, Party Down.
Yeah, it's a great, great show, and Adam was the lead in that. But I guess the stories that I think about the most and are the ones in which I had genuine enthusiasm about artists who are creating great work, and I would, at the end of the day, go, why aren't you a big star? Why aren't you a mainstream star? And I would, you know, put on the cheerleader outfit, you know, in a way, and try to tell our readers, hey, one of your neighbors in Santa Cruz, this person is doing something remarkable. It's amazing. And you just played Marty Stewart there. It made me think of the Mermen.
Oh, the Mermen, absolutely.
Jim Thomas, the guitarist, who has become a friend, and how I did a huge piece on them. And it was like, oh, gosh, I love these guys so much. I want to do the Mermen biography. I want to really kind of tell the entire world where this came from and how brilliant this guy is as a musician and an artist. And I don't know if I ever kind of touched on that or reached it or fully expressed it, but it was a joy to write, and that's certainly one I remember. And there are others along that line also of giving people a spotlight that deserve it. You know, the great choreographer and dancer Tandy Beal is one of the greats in American dance, in my view. And she is one of us. She lives locally. And some of the shows she's produced here after here about life after death and a take on the Nutcracker that she produced several years ago. This was top drawer, top flight stuff that was, I think maybe overlooked. And
but Santa Cruz is sort of a hermetically sealed petri dish of great art. You know, some people break out like an Adam Scott. Some people don't break out but are beloved. Merman, you know, various things
sure.
that go on. But it's A-plus level art. And what you did do, and again, we don't accept your retirement, is to give sustenance and validation by writing about people and saying, I think from my platform that you are an important, your work matters, and you're not just speaking to the listener to say, hey, go to the shows and buy the tickets.
Right,
you're also
right.
Mainlining to the, see, I'm making you feel guilty now that you're giving up this bully, you know, this bully pulpit, but that's an important thing to do, and you had that responsibility and passion for your work and your support.
Another story along those lines is that my daughter was at middle school at Mission Hill, and she came home one day and says, you know, my teacher is a singer. He's really good. I'm like, sure, of course, yeah. And then I heard him. And, you know, only because he was my kid's teacher. And his name is Bryn Loosley. I don't know if you know Bryn, but he is one of the most amazing singer-songwriter people I have ever heard. And that's kind of my jam, too. I mean, that's all I listen to, pretty much. And he is right up there with many of the greats. And, of course, nobody's ever heard of him because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't hustle and try to get on the career ladder. He's just a family guy who is doing beautiful stuff, and that's the kind of thing that is so gratifying to throw a spotlight on, because they're probably not going to get another kind of spotlight like that, or that kind of attention. So that's been very gratifying for me. And there's just a long list of people that fall into that category.
Well, let's I'm sure as a literary type, you know the law of Chekhov's mermen, which if you mention the mermen in Act 1, the mermen have to go off in Act 3. So let's play something by the mermen right now, and we'll come back with more exit interview with Wallace Bayne, and also perhaps a job hunt for Wallace Bayne. I want to talk a little bit about that, and the state of media, too, a big, obvious question that I'm going to give you 4 minutes and 14 seconds of mermen to think about is the changing media landscape. You know, not only how are you going to find a replacement for you, Wallace Bayne, does the media even exist where a Wallace Bayne can do his thing now? So let's ponder that question collectively. Here are the mermen. Wasn't there a radio show in this fine, fine radio station, KSQD, that just might have used that song as its theme song, Wallace Bane?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm now so blissed out after hearing that. It's just so, so beautiful. Just takes me into the skies. It's just wonderful.
Well, before we had about 2 minutes to talk before we hit the on-air button, which is part of the great preparation of What a Week every week. And you mentioned that, yes, Lookout, the fine Pulitzer Prize-winning local reinvent the structure of media, is looking for a quote-unquote replacement for you to cover arts and culture, which I didn't know about. But you said something that was quite interesting, was about when you started and the kind of people who'd crossed the transom versus now. So I won't put words in your mouth, but
right. Well, I'm an old timer. I started at the Sentinel in 1991. I started at the Gilroy Dispatch in my first daily job. My first day at work was October 17th, 1989. By the way,
oh, good timing.
The earthquake.
Good timing.
Over in Gilroy.
Not nice to mess with Mother Nature.
It was pretty amazing. But I can't think of many more lines of work that have changed so utterly than newspaper journalism has in the last 30 years. Now, when I started, there was no internet, remember. There was no office email was kind of
no platform for you, the American, to present your thoughts unfiltered to the mass media. There was no,
right.
No, think about it.
It was the mail, Eric.
Yeah, yeah.
The mail, letters. We had letter openers, and we'd open letters. And it was very much an analog world. The press was down in the basement, and we had deadlines that, you know, for the morning paper, and if something happened during the day, you just had to wait till the next morning, right? And I think we were talking about when in the 90s, when I was starting at the Sentinel, it was very common for young people to come in and talk about my job and how they wanted to either write about music or movies or art or culture or books in some kind of meaningful way. And they were all really smart UCSC students, most of them from elsewhere, who would come in, and they had amazing stuff they would show us. And we hired a few of them and stuff. And that was a common thing, that you'd have a young generation of people who wanted to be writers. What is happening now is that has really, in the last 10 years or so, I would say, has almost completely vanished, from my perspective anyway. I'm not seeing those young people who are coming to me saying, wow, you have a great job. I want to do your job.
Well, they probably sense what they're doing is making TikTok videos, wanting to be influencers.
Sure.
And there's no places in the last 10. People are going to go to the Sentinel right now. You know, we want to go to be part of a real estate scam that had Alden Hedge Fund is running. There's Lookout, and I think this should be a call to arm. If you're listening and you're under 30 or under 40, let's say, you're
yes.
not in Wallace and I's 65 to death demographic,
right.
And you want to write about stuff, there's the place to go, and a job could be
yes.
waiting for you.
Yes.
You can express yourself if you're hyper literate. No one can ever replace Wallace Bane, but you know, maybe it's time for someone new. But it's just that the entire landscape has changed, you know, where the communication neural network has changed. I mean,
it's turned upside down. It really has.
There aren't incredibly talented. They're obviously insanely talented people. But as I say, TikTok, making YouTube videos. The best documentary, that's my business. I know from this. Best, not just the best documentary I saw last year. The best documentary I've seen in the last 5 years was by an influencer who checked into the late unlamented Star Wars hotel before it went out of business and filmed everything and did a 4-hour documentary on staying there and how this relates to corporate capitalism and the misery of the workers and the Star Wars experience. You know, it got over a million hits and was flawless. It was amazing. And she hosted it. She was like on camera wearing cute little costumes. utterly brilliant. And I watched this thing, and I thought, you know, I'm a dinosaur, and I just saw a nest of mammal eggs, and I can see that asteroid up there. You know, it's like there is no role for me anymore in this society. If somebody can do something this good, have millions of people watch it, unmediated, and obviously make a lot of money doing it, I'm obsolete.
If that person had been born 20 or 30 years before, they would not have had those kinds of opportunities. There were very few opportunities for young people. And, yeah, and I don't want to paint a rosy picture of the old days, because if you were a smart person who could make a contribution in media, you didn't have a whole lot of options.
Well, in the Bay Area, I went to an outfit called Video West in San Francisco, which had a show on a UHF station in 1979. I was 24 when I started doing my first stuff. Unpaid, volunteer. You know,
yeah.
Makes KSQD look like Barry Weiss's Free Press as far as thing. But that's how I got in, and had to basically give it away till for 5 years, living on unemployment and learning the craft. And I could not get arrested for many excellent reasons, I might point out, in San Francisco mainstream media. But
yeah,
it was a very tiny window of opportunity, and you really had to find it and be able to figure out how to get by on unemployment for 5 years.
Right, right. And also there was a very bright line between the printed word, the written word, and the spoken word, the broadcast word. And I wonder what the new media landscape, the deep implications of the written word are. You know, 20 years ago, everybody was doing a blog, and now a lot of people have, you know, a Substack, and social media is still depends on the written word to some extent.
And, you know, Blue Sky, where I get my stuff, links to Sarah Kenzior has done, I've been lucky enough to do a couple shows with her, writes brilliant stuff, books, and a great Substack, and pithy two-liner Blue Sky tweets. So, you know, but no one's compensated, yet she makes a living doing it.
Writing is not dead, certainly.
So, yeah, if you're able to express yourself, there are outlets, but the idea of, just like the Sentinel's down in flames, CBS News, there used to be a trademark of quality. And now that the secondary Satan, I like to call him, David Zaslav, is basically strip-mined and looted Warner Brothers, which, what a week predicted, based on the fact that I knew this guy from the Discovery days. He did exactly what I said he was going to do.
Yep.
And well, no doubt, if the hemorrhoid-lipped fail son, David Ellison, coughs up the money, he'll sell it to the highest bidder, and Larry Ellison will get Warner Brothers, ergo HBO, ergo say goodbye John Oliver within 48 hours of him taking it over. But you know what? John Oliver then and Stephen Colbert, assuming he's not running for president, who I'm hoping, Stephen Colbert for president 2028, you laugh, you scoff, telling you. But anyway, I digress with that thought. But, you know, they'll go elsewhere and they'll make Joe Rogan look like the obese, half-bright moron that he is and get a lot more viewers. So it's not like Colbert and Oliver, they can be muzzled. We're not at
of course, Chinese level
of totalitarian.
Yes.
There's just too many people out there. Oh, didn't I mention these people are grossly incompetent ass clowns who would say do a vanity invasion of Venezuela without any idea what to do with it once they've got it. But, and now we're steering back to the beginning of the show again. But, you know, but it's important to kick the gong around. And, you know, I'll be interested to see if they can't find a replacement for you, because who are they going to get who has 34 years of institutional slash writing slash cultural knowledge, who knows?
Well, I hope they're not looking for that. I hope they're looking for somebody who is young and fresh and is wanting to do a fresh vision and not be me.
Well, Brad Kovat joined me for a What a Week and said that, you know, that they're looking for younger writers, and they're looking for stories that aren't our demographic. You know, KSQD is doing that. You know,
right,
we would love too many old graybeards like myself on the radio, you know, who not sure up to speed on that kid's music. But then they don't need a radio station necessarily. They can reach the people. They can reach the people they want to reach. And if they're really good at it, or they hit the right thing, they can reach millions and millions of people, and not just doing toxic waste like the Kardashians or some of the kind of dispensable influences.
Right, right. It's not just really about reach either. It's also about viewpoint, you know. I mean, one of the important roles that we had when I was first starting out was the gatekeeping role, essentially.
Well, it meant something. If you were in print in The Sentinel, if you were in print in or had a show on HBO, or George Carlin had that pulpit to do his work, it mattered. But once Warner Brothers divests themselves and Netflix takes over HBO, what is HBO? You know, what is the brand?
Right.
I saw the Discovery Channel, which I did did a massive amount of work for 15 years, start out as something really cool, and then the Gargoyles took over the cathedral. Looking at you, David Zaslav. They just destroyed it, and it turned into this complete S-word show of DocuSoap, you know, moonshiners. And
right.
I remember when I first saw the Mythbusters bend over and I saw my first butt crack on the Discovery Channel. And I had that moment. It was like seeing Dylan go electric. I realized, uh-oh, the kind of middle brow smart history things I'm doing for Discovery, no one wants that anymore. But you know what? If you want to see the equivalent of the smart middle brow history stuff I did on Discovery, it's all over YouTube and it's better than the stuff I did. And even more anal retentive and nerdy about World War II history. So there are places to go, but it's unmediated and the brands don't exist anymore. Discovery doesn't mean anything. You know, The Sentinel doesn't mean anything. HBO isn't going to mean anything. But then you look at Lookout, it means something. It has a reputation.
Right.
You know, subscription base is going good. I like to think KSQD means something. You know, we have a loyal audience and we're speaking to our community. And so is Lookout. And, you know, we are offer doorways and paths so people can read more, find more, or entertain their brains. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't buy this retirement thing, Wallace Bain, okay? So what are you really going to do? Okay, we'll allow you a month off maybe, but, you know, you owe it to us, the community, and your talent. You know, there are a lot of artists out there who need a nurturing leg up.
Well, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people over the years who have had a kind of phobia of that word, retirement. They'd, I don't want to do that. And I thought that was kind of needlessly coy. I am retiring from the daily
grind,
the hamster wheel, and I need it. I am just, we need a new voice on that hamster wheel. We need new energy. We need something else. But I am, obviously, I'm going to continue to write just on my own schedule and on my own, you know, volition. And I guess if I may be so bold, I think the next thing you see from me will be something that I chose myself and wanted to kind of highlight as something that I'm interested in, as opposed to being assigned or... not to say that it's been that way, at least at Lookout. At Lookout, they've just let me kind of run the ship. But still, it was something that I was expected to hit the mark just constantly. And that's what's going to stop for me. And I will be kind of out of the loop for probably a couple of months. But I expect to be part of the conversation in 2026, just not so in your face, I guess.
Well, an easy conversation is the doorways open anytime on What a Week. You know, anytime you amble in 5 minutes before airtime, happen to be in the neighborhood jogging and have something to get off your chest or want to hear more mermen, just give our request.
All right, great.
Well, one thing, Wallace Bain, you've mentioned, I've seen this in a couple, I think you wrote in your farewell column about you're looking forward to feeding pigeons. Wasn't that something you've mentioned?
Yeah. Are you about to play Tom Lehrer?
I'm about to play Tom Lehrer. Kept seeing that, I said, you know, there's only one artist who can do justice, another local hero, a cultural local hero who has just the song for you.
I never got to interview, by the way, because he would
nobody
not
got
have
to interview.
Nobody
only,
got
only,
to interview.
Well,
yes.
Gary Shapiro, our own beloved Uncle Gary Shapiro, was close friends with Tom and I think did interview him, but whether those tapes will ever see the light of day. But
yeah.
Gary got to Tom. But yeah, but you see, Wallace, this is the thing. How many other people could I just mention the word pigeons and song and make that immediate connection? So all those 20-something whippersnappers have a few things to learn from us old graybeards. I'm Eric Nelson.
And I'm Wallace Bain.
You've been listening to What a Week on KSQD, and in just a few minutes after Tom Lehrer gets his mojo working, it's going to be time for The Grateful Dead Zone. Thank you, Wallace.
Thank you, Eric.
is here, a suffering is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We've gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.